This week, more than 50 years after the end of the Second World War, the Austrian government sold off art owned by the Jews of Vienna. The proceeds will go to Holocaust survivors or the families of victims. At the same time, attention has been focusing on the question of what happened to Jewish wealth deposited in Swiss banks. NPR's Michael Goldfarb has that story.
In a quiet, clean office at the University of Bern's Historical Institute, historian Peter Hug is going through some documents.
We are looking at the treaty between Switzerland and Polish government in 1949, 25th of June.
The Swiss-Polish treaty comes from one of 65,000 boxes in the Swiss government's archives on Jewish property. Each box contains around 2,000 pieces of paper, several million pages in all. Hug has been appointed by the Swiss government to go through all of them. The scale of the paperwork reflects the complexity of the situation, as does the story of the Polish treaty. After the war, Eastern Bloc countries like Poland were strapped for hard currency. Swiss firms wanted to do business there, but demanded payment in hard currency. The Swiss government allowed the Polish government to claim money from the accounts of Polish Jews, which had been inactive for a number of years, as compensation for property taken by the Nazis from Poland. This hard currency was then used by Poland to pay the Swiss businessmen. That's not the end of the story, according to historian Hug, because the Swiss assigned the obligation to the Polish government to honor legitimate claims on those funds made after 1949.
Polish government is still today liable to give this property back to the original claimers.
The arrangement is legal and above board. The controversy stems from how to verify those claims. Jews deposited money in Swiss banks in the years before the war, frequently in numbered accounts, because they feared using their real Jewish-sounding names. They also assigned their life insurance, or life assurance, as it's called in Europe, to be paid into these accounts. Previous attempts to get a full accounting from the banks has not been possible because of the nature of Swiss society, according to Hug.
Switzerland has a weak government and a very strong society. The Swiss banks and Swiss assurances are extremely powerful, and Swiss government had no legal instrument to look behind the thick walls of the banks and assurances.
After the war, the Swiss banks insisted on firm legal proofs from the heirs of Holocaust victims to reclaim the money, specifically the account numbers, but many of the heirs did not know the numbers. Again, there's nothing illegal in the way the banks behaved. Hug says the archives contain thousands of letters written by Holocaust survivors to the banks.
I was extremely touched by these letters. These were cries of very poor people who had suffered, and there had big hopes on property maybe some relatives had deposited in Switzerland. It was just a big arrogance by Swiss banks and as well Swiss government not to make investigations.
That view is shared by Jewish organizations who claim the banks are sitting on billions of dollars in deposits. That's not likely, according to Hug. However, there is another source of Jewish money in Swiss banks. The Nazis deposited vast amounts of gold plundered during their conquest, much of it taken from Jews, sometimes literally ripped from the mouths of Jewish corpses. Hug estimates this wealth in the billions. It is extremely difficult to track. Much of it was transshipped through Switzerland after the war, $400 million reportedly going to Portugal. Other destinations included South America and South Africa. The World Jewish Congress is demanding a full accounting, and so is New York Senator Al D'Amato. D'Amato has accused the Swiss government of providing half-truths and distortions in response to questions he's raised about the money. The Swiss government has been stung by the criticisms. It appointed Thomas Borer, a highly regarded diplomat and lawyer, to oversee its investigation. Borer acknowledges that historically, the Swiss banks and the government have taken the wrong approach to dealing with the problem.
Okay, maybe Switzerland looked on all these kinds of questions too long from a pure legal point of view. And we have to change now this point of view to a more moral point of view, because it's a moral question.
But Borer angrily disclaims accusations from the U.S. that the Swiss government is too biased to conduct an honest investigation.
International public opinion wants the truth. The Swiss government wants the truth. I want the truth. And we will get the truth.
Switzerland's Jewish community of 18,000 is inclined to trust their government. Rolf Block, a community leader, says he's grateful to D'Amato for calling attention to the situation, but adds that the senator's robust language is now counterproductive.
He is addressing Americans, but the Swiss hear it. And they have another vocabulary here, and they have other reaction to words which in America maybe they don't have exactly in the same way. So I would say that Senator D'Amato has done a good job to start with, but now we have to be very careful, as I said, not to overdo it.
Block adds that there is the possibility that overplaying the issue could lead to an anti-Semitic backlash in Switzerland. Back at his office, historian Peter Hug says he wants to hear his government speak clearly about Switzerland's complicity in the Nazi terror.
I think it is extremely important to find the truth and to say, sorry, yes, we had collaborated with Nazi Germany. We have made things which are extremely immoral with the Jewish victims, and we are sorry, and we will find a new role in a new world.
The Swiss government has said that it will lift the strict bank secrecy laws for 5 years to allow a full investigation. I'm Michael Goldfarb reporting.